Today is Wednesday, June the 4th, Rosh Chodesh Iyar. This is the women's Chumash here. We are on Dvarim Perek Chav Chet. Actually, Perek Chav Zayin, Psukim Yud Aleph. Okay, Rabotai.
I redistributed the sheets that we gave out last week, and I also have another handout for something for today. But I just want to pick up on things that we did last week, and specifically to see last week we again saw the unit of the brachot of Har Grizim and Har Eval that are described from Pasuk Perek Chav Zayin, Psukim Yud Aleph through Chavav. We offered alternate explanations as to the assignment of Shvatim, which six were placed on Har Grizim for the bracha, which six on Har Eval for the klala, as well as Ibn Ezra, the Rashbam, as to why these 11 happen to have been selected amongst all of the 613 commandments of the Torah, why these 11 selected these particular Averot of Arur Ha'ish, Asher Ya'aseh Pesul Masecha, Arur Makle Avivi Imo, and the Rashbam was the spokesman for virtually everybody who believed that the common denominator in each one of these is Visam Basater. And that phrase appears in two of the 11 that are quoted here, where the transgression could have taken place in public as well. The other 9 generally take place only in secret fashion. One does not necessarily violate those in public. However, the 2 during which, for which you can violate in public, and here the thrust is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's curse is directed at only at people who violate it quietly, clandestinely. If you engage in public transgression, there's no need for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to interfere. After all, there is a Bet Din. Bet Din handles these cases. If a Bet Din sees that you publicly take an idol and you bow down, so we know what you do. You are warned, you're not allowed to do this. If you do this, you're going to get executed. Very simple. Same thing with thievery. If somebody sees, who was moving the fence last week?
Aviva.
If somebody says, Aviva, right. Somebody sees me in a line. Neither of them here today. That's why they're not here. That's what they're out moving each other's fences. If somebody sees you about to move someone else's fence, they warn you, ma'am, sir, you're about to violate the law of Lo Tigzol, and you're about to violate the law of Lo Tasig Gvul Re'acha, and if you do so, you will be held accountable for it. But if you do it in the middle of the night, that's where this is coming in. So the common denominator for these 11, claimed the Rashbam, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't stand the hypocrite. Because in public, how does the person conduct himself? He wears Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin, in addition to Rashi's tefillin. But in private, that's when the individual cannot control him or herself, and they violate these things for which you are prone to take advantage of, and people will not become aware of what you are doing. That was the Rashbam's theory. I just want to show you Rashi, and Rashi says something which is somewhat difficult to swallow. Take a look at Rashi Chav Dalet. He too addresses why 11. And he somehow identifies the significance of the number without identifying why these 11. But he does address the number. Take a look at Rashi. Make re'ehu baseser. It's in Pasuk Chaf Dalet. So, first of all, Rashi chooses to do something which is very unusual. It's not really unusual, but in Pasuk Chaf Dalet, take a look at the Pasuk first. Arur make re'ehu basater.
Don't look at Rashi. Just translate what the pasuk means. Cursed shall be the individual who does what?
Okay,
who does what? What?
Why?
Exactly. In a dark alley, what does he do? He belts somebody. That's very simple. Makereiro basata. And the reason why it says basata is because there are people who occasionally have such gall, such chutzpah, that they don't mind doing it. They don't worry about doing it in a public alleyway. They will be brazen enough to do it, what? In public. So here, I will tell you that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's curse is for doing it, you know, quietly. Rashi suddenly switches Mate Re'eyu, and he cites Yonatan ben Uziel, who does this, can't blame Rashi. Materei basata alashon harahu omer. Striking somebody else quietly doesn't mean necessarily striking them in an alleyway, but according to Rashi, what this means, and Yonatan ben Uziel, it means you strike at someone else without even directly contacting that individual. You talk about him. And when you talk about him, that particular person who you talk about is being struck by you. And it's a very penetrating statement. Trust me, it's not the pshat. Mate Re'ehu Vasoser. But it's a very interesting idea of how to interpret it. But now comes to Rashi's point, where I mentioned that Rashi, yes?
What's bothering Rashi that he feels
a
need to do such a far...
I don't know. I honestly don't know what's driving Rashi. But here, I don't know. I don't know why he doesn't feel comfortable with the simple interpretation.
Maybe it's not that he doesn't feel comfortable with it. I mean, it's possible that he also agrees with the fact that you should literally hit someone.
Correct.
But hitting is also, I guess, you know, he also wants to put an emphasis on Lashon Hara.
Okay. Right, but I want to tell you that. If the case was Lashon Hara, what word in the pasuk would be totally superfluous? Correct. Because that's not something you do in public in general. It's usually done basater, you know, with one-to-one. And the point which Rashbam had made is that the only time that basater is mentioned, is only two of the 11, is based on the fact that at times the activity is done often in public. People, you know, you don't get up on a microphone and make an announcement, you know, to engage in Lashon Hara. The president of the shul doesn't intentionally say Lashon Hara publicly. No, I don't think they identify people in public. Okay, it's somewhat a stretch. I don't have a good answer as to what's bothering Rashi. Why is he not satisfied with the Pshuto Shel Mikra in this case? I don't know. Doesn't seem to be anything linguistically that's bothering. I don't know. But then Rashi says, Ra'iti b'yisodo shon Rav Moshe Hadarshis. Yud Aleph Arurim Yeshkan. There are 11 curses. Okay? You'll count them. Or you'll go to Sesame Street, you'll ask the count. The count. Keneged Yud Aleph Shvatim. There are 11 curses because there are 11 tribes. That's nice. 11 tribes? There are 12 tribes. Ukineged Shimon Lokatuv Arur. But to correspond, to represent Shimon, there are no curses listed to correspond to Shimon. Why? Lefi shelo haya bili bo levarcho lifnei moto, kishabirech shar hashvatim. Because Moshe had no inclination to bless Shimon amongst all of the tribes in Vizot HaBracha, which we will learn about. Moshe did not bless Shimon. So because he didn't want to bless Shimon, therefore, he doesn't list a 12th transgression which somehow would symbolize Shimon. Bad enough that I don't bless him, I don't want to curse him.
Why didn't he bless him at that point?
Okay, that's a question which we're going to learn. That's a question we're going to learn when we get to Zayin Sarah. Why did Moshe not bless Shimon? But tell me what else is difficult about Rashi's remark. two things that are difficult about Rashi's remark. Two things.
Specifically for
of course. Where did Rashi get this idea that the curses here are aligned per shevet? Are aligned per shevet. Where did he get that idea from? That's somewhat difficult. We don't see that. Even though Rashi had given us a glimpse in relationship to one of the Shvatim, which one? Why was Reuven placed on the curse side? Because he moved the bed, and to some extent, which of the 11 would he have been guilty of? Arur, which one? Shochevim, Eshet Aviv, the one in Pasukha. Now, Rashi's remark, I would be willing to stretch it, if Shimon had listed himself, or had been listed on which mountain? Har Eval. So if Shimon is placed on Har Eval, I can understand why you might want to claim, for some strange reason, even if you believe that the curses are somehow linked to the Shvatim, and now it will become imperative to say how each one of the 11 somehow aligns themselves with one of the Shvatim, because if you do that for Reuven, you're going to do that for everybody else. Shimon is not even on the cursed side. He's on what side? He's on the Baruch side. So it's a little difficult. Rashi's comment is a little difficult that the 11 which HaKadosh Baruch Hu selects at this particular time, or Moshe selects time, corresponds to him, and he knows that he's not. Don't you think that somebody would have asked some questions? You know, it's pretty much a stretch, but Rashi says it. Rashi says it. It's the name of a Medrash. It's not terribly compelling, yes.
Could it maybe be related to the fact that Yaakov, when he left the town, the only one that he said are were to for Shimon and Levi, Levi's not here anyway.
No, but Levi is. Levi's one of the people of Yamdu Ala Bracha.
Yeah, well, but he's one who's uttering.
But he's also Obed Ala Bracha. He's one of the priests on the mountain. That's what we pointed out last week also. Which one was? Where was Levi? And we said that we split up Shevet Levi. Those who carried the Aron were down on the bottom, and the ones who were the Mevorchim, and the rest of them, all of the rest of Shevet Levi was on Har Brizim. Yes?
Well, the thing is, with this thing, it's talking about Lashon Hara and Shimon. The reason I asked, why is Shimon left out from a bracha later, does that have anything to do with Lashon Hara? And why is it put in the same
You're asking, that's a double question, it's a very good question. Why did Rashi choose to make his remark about the number specifically here?
Right.
It's a very good question. It's a good question. Could have been at the beginning or at the end. But why specifically? I don't know of any episode in which Shimon particularly is linked with Lashon Hara. I've never seen that, yeah.
Brachot and
Kolos
coming from Moshe personally, the way Yaakov gave
Brachot,
or is it coming from Kashmir?
No. That's the greatest difficulty.
Right.
Moshe Rabbeinu here is not giving any Brachot whatsoever, because number one, he's not going to be there. So these are being instructed in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, obviously, Eliam, and anybody who does this, and anybody who does that. It's not Moshe Rabbeinu's bracha. Exactly. This is a covenant that Am Yisrael are making with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you observe this, you'll get all of this, and so on and so forth, as they get into Eretz Yisrael. That even compounds it even further, that this is selected, and Moshe didn't want to bless Shimon, so therefore he's... This is not him. This is HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling him to do this. It's not Moshe's selection. That's another very important point.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That is correct. And nonetheless, Levi is up here. Levi is included. But Levi is included. So if you wanted to say that Shimon should make, then Levi should be eliminated as well. Right? Yeah.
Saying that where the tribes were positioned was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decision, not Moses?
That is correct. And which Averot are selected to be mentioned here is also God's decision, not Moshe's. Just on the point of when Rashi's first comment, Aloshon Hara,
I remember this very well. One of the great Darshanim, who I had a chance to listen to when I grew up in Borough Park, Rabbi Wahlberg, was an outstanding Darshan in Congregation Shomer Emunah. So he always used to say, when he gave a Shabbos Shuvah drasha, so he would talk about Lashon Hara from time to time, he always said that if Balabatim were to say about the rabbi that he can't daven well, or that the chazan can't give a good drasha, that might be Lashon Hara. But to say that the rabbi can't darshan and the chazan doesn't know how to daven, that's shvichus damim. That's murder. You know, that's much worse than, that's makereehu. That's makereehu, which Rashi says is Lashon Hara. That by talking about, you're actually striking the person, and you're hurting his livelihood, and so he always used to comment that on Rashi's pointing. I want to give you a totally different perspective about what has been selected here. Please look at the sheets in the name of the Sfarno. On the bottom left-hand column. Look at it about 7-8 lines from the bottom. You will see there he says Yecheskel Chof Bet Vav through Zion. So on the second page of the handout, I have Yecheskel chapter Chof Bet. Please open up to the second page first, and then you can appreciate what he says. Take a look at Zion. Av vo'ein heikalu bach. Lager asu ba'oshek bitokech. Yatom va'almana honu bach. Mother and father were ridiculed. The ger was treated, his property was stolen. The orphan and the widow were deceived by you. Announce, and then you take a look at Ervas of Gila Bach, and the Ish et Kalato Timei Bezima in Yud Aleph, Ish et Kalato Timei Bezima, Pasuk Yud Bet, Shochad Lachu Bach Leman Shvach Dam. You took bribes. Very nice. Now look, go back to the Psukim, and then you'll go back. Then you'll look at Sfarno. Look at him. Says Sfarno, he makes this incredible observation. Yecheskel made reference to so many of these that are mentioned in this unit. For example, Arur in Yutet, Matem Mishpat Ger V'Yatom V'Almana. He mentioned Ger, Yatom, and Almana. He mentions somebody who insults father. That's in Tet Zayin. Arur Makle Aviv Imo. Good. Then he mentions Anshe Rachil Hayubach. People who engage in Rachilus. That would fit in very nicely with Rashi Makereyu. You know, Lashon Hara and Rachilus, pretty much the same bag. What? Or Ish et Achoto Bat Aviv Ina Bach. Somebody slept with his daughter, with his sister. And it says in Chafet, Aru Shochev Em Achoto. Says Sfarno, these 11 things here happen to be mentioned exactly where? In Yecheskel. Now these Sukkim of Yecheskel, if you look now, please go to the second sheet. Ve'ata ben Adam, it's the beginning of Kofet, Vahid Bar Hashem Elad Elor. Ve'ata ben Adam, Hatishpot et Ir Hadabim. This is the Haftarah that is printed in every Chumash for Parshat Kedoshim. For Parshat Kedoshim.
It is the Haftarah printed for Parshat Kedoshim. It makes sense, because in Parshat Kedoshim, there are a lot of these commandments in, about Ish Imo V'Aviv Tira'u, about thievery, all of the Arayot are listed in Parshat Kedoshim. So it makes sense that this happens to be something that would be appendaged to Parshat Kedoshim. However, there is a machloket in the Gemara between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim whether this particular paragraph, Yechezkel, should ever be read in public or not. Rabbi Eliezer was of the opinion, Ein kol'in to'evot Yerushalayim b'farhesia. We never read about the abominations of Yerushalayim in public. And that's what he's doing, Yechezkel. Hatishkot, hatishkot, ir hadamim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will you ultimately judge what? The city of blood that deserves to be killed.
Okay.
Hold on. Good. Okay. Not saying no. Hold on. Eicha is suvim. It's not Nevi'im. And it's a good question. I'm not saying no. Now, whenever there are two parshiyot, which we read together, we always read the Haftarah of the second parsha. For example, we read Kazria and Mitzora are often together. The Har B'Chukotai are often together, except during a leap year. We always read the Haftarah of the second parsha. Always. The only exception is Acharei Mot in Kedoshim. Acharei Mot, the Haftarah is selected from Amos, and Kedoshim is this. Whenever Acharei Mot are together, we read Acharei Mot. And we go, in deference to Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, not to read about Tolevot Yerushalayim B'Farhesia. In fact, the Gaon and the Rav believe, and that's our practice in Rinat as well, that if Acharei Mot and Kedoshim are separate, so then you have to read we read Acharei Mot Haftarah twice. For Acharei Mot and for Kedoshim, not to read To'evot Yerushalayim B'Farhesia. So what's happening according to Sfarno, what now happens to these selected Averot? What's the function of this particular unit if Sfarno identifies it as something that Yechezkel found fault with? What's the function of this particular? Exactly, precisely. This is now recognizing that we are forging a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu specifically to include Eretz Yisrael. I mentioned this last week. There was Brit Sinai, which established Am Yisrael as a nation, and that irrespective of where we are, even in the Midbar. And now a new Kritut Brit is taking place to include in the covenant that there is Eretz Yisrael as well. And the Torah is giving some type of a glimpse of a vision which Averot are HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to be what? Very, very concerned about for some reason, and that it ultimately will lead to abrogating our right and claim to Eretz Yisrael. Proof the pudding? Because when Yechezkel is going to offer prophecy, as Am Yisrael are al Naharot Babel, as Yechezkel says in the very beginning, Va'ani b'toch hagolah, I'm already on my way to exile. What Yechezkel now has this flashback to this particular unit of Hagrizim and Harevau. You want to know why this happened? Just remembered what you had pledged to observe as you entered Eretz Yisrael on Hagrizim and Harevau. It's a very interesting perspective suggested by Sfarno to see the connection between these two episodes. Right. These two episodes, yes.
I read somewhere that Rambam has said that we will not be able to live in Eretz Yisrael unless we deserve it and follow these commands. Did Rambam say that?
It's not Rambam. The Torah says that, basically.
I mean, this is actually saying that.
That's correct. Yes, that's correct to some extent. Good. Then let's move on. Please now look at the very last of the very last of the 11 curses. Arur asher lo yakim et divrei haTorah hazot la'asot otam ve'amar kol ha'am amen. This is a most puzzling pasuk. But what exactly is it referring to? So we're going to see three perspectives, and then I also posed that to you, the Rambam who cites the Yerushalmi, an incredible Yerushalmi, and I want you to see it inside. So post that in here to everybody, the Yerushalmi, the Rambam rather, and two other things there as well, which are important. Yeah, second sheet, second one. Distributed.
Yeah, that's possibly foreign
16,000 times.
But it
doesn't
have one more?
Right, yes. Okay, so first we'll start with Rashi. Rashi says, Arura shelo yakim et divrei haTorah hazot la'asot otam, which seems to be a rather broad statement, says Rashi, kan kolal et kol haTorah kula. In this one phrase, everything of the rest of the Torah is now included. V'kiblu aleihem be'alah u'bishvua. And they now accept the obligation to what? To observe the rest of the Torah with the same oath and covenant, taking the oath and swearing, yes, the rest of the Torah. Very nice. Tell me, Rabotai, what's difficult about that? What's difficult? Yes?
They already said on Har Sinai, not the Mishnah.
Okay, but that the answer is, this is a new covenant, as we just said, to include Eretz Yisrael. So if you have a new covenant, I'm including everything. Yes.
And they don't need to be involved.
Of course. Why do I, if I'm going to find it necessary to itemize 11, but then I'm going to do 602 with a broad statement, so why bother? Just give one broad statement. Arur ashelo yakim et kol divrei haTorah hazot. Cursed shall be the end. So you'll first start Baruch. Baruch, anybody will be blessed for you observing the whole Torah, and curse you shall be for anybody who ignores any aspect of the Torah. That's Rashi's interpretation, and it's somewhat difficult. So now let's take a look at two other possibilities. Take a look at the Ramban. We'll see the Ramban offers two possibilities. First, and on the right hand column, first, the Ramban quotes Rashi, "Kam kalal et kol haTorah kula v'kibul aleim ba'ala b'shul lashon Rashi." Ulefi da'ati, line 3, "Ki kabbalah hazot sheyodeh b'mitzvot b'libo v'yihiyu b'einav emet v'ya'amin sheha'oseh otan yihiyeh lo schar v'tova." Over alehen ye anesh. The im yichpor beachat mehen, o tihiye beinav bitela, leolam hinei hu arur, or bitela leolam hinei hu arur. Here the Ramban says, I'm going to identify the phrase and then I'll translate it for you inside. It's called a mumma lahakas. A mumar lehakis. There are several types of rebelliousness that the halacha discusses. And here the Ramban is talking about one type. For example, you go into Pathmark and you have two chickens sitting right next to each other. There is Empire, What does Empire Chicken cost? $2 a pound?
$2.49
a pound. Did you ever look at what Frank Perdue's chickens are selling? 99 cents a pound. Whoa. $1.50 difference per pound. Okay? So the guy says, I know there is a Rabbeinu Shel Olam. I know that there's some validity to kashrut. I just can't see myself paying $1.50 more for a kosher chicken. See, he buys non-kosher meat for a profit to save some money. That's called a mumar l'tei avon. L'tei avon. Because he's going to gain something from it. A mumar l'tei avon, as I once told you, only forfeits halachic trustworthiness in this area of halacha. That's all. Nothing else. But for some reason, if he'll tell you that his stuff is kosher l'Pesach, that's okay. Pesach he thinks is important, even though it costs a lot of money. But he just thinks that paying money for meat is ridiculous. And you can get the Frank Perdue chickens. Here the Ramban is discussing what's called a mumah l'hakas, where somebody in the world, which is the world of make-believe, where Empire chickens cost 99 cents a pound, and Frank Perdue cost $2.49. And this guy deliberately buys Frank Perdue chickens. L'hakas. Because I couldn't care less about the Aveira of Kashrut. Not interested. That's what the Ramban believes is Arur Asher Lo Yakim et Divrei HaTorah Hazot. Somebody who claims that this any one of the mitzvot, any one of the mitzvot has no validity to whatsoever, has no validity to it. And it's called technically a mumah l'hakas. Lehachis. Hachis lamid hei chof ayin yud samach. Hachis. Lehachis means to do something deliberately, in spite. In spite, yes.
I would think in this situation, it would seem parallel to saying that this person is doing this sin. He's buying the Empire, he's buying the Purdue chicken, the Seder.
No, this is nothing. This is nothing to do with Seder anymore.
These are words. So the last one you would think would also have to do with something that's done the same.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. But here's where the Ramban says the 11, the reason why those 11 are specified is because it has the Baseta common denominator. This one is a broad sweeping statement to apply to 613 commandments.
Yes, but...
613.
But whereas on Hasina we already accepted the Torah, this seems to say, and if you're going to pretend that you accepted the Torah, but you really didn't, you're really in your quietly disobeying the Torah, then you are a royal.
That's for the 11. But here he's coming up with a new category. That if anybody says, I accept the Torah, but for any single mitzvah, I don't believe there is any validity that the curse will befall such an individual as well. But if you're lazy, and he gives the example, I woke up one morning and I didn't die. I was lazy. I woke up one morning and I didn't take lulav on the first day of Sukkot. For being lazy, or because you wanted some financial gain, God doesn't curse you for that. It's when he curses you is because you in effect claim, I'm perfectly capable, I can afford it. Nonetheless, I think this entire institution is worthless. And therefore, Arur Asher Lo Yakim et Divrei HaTorah Hazot. That's interpretation number one, yes.
I thought the curse was for Israel, not the individual.
What?
The curse on the individual or for Klal Yisrael?
No, for the individual who refuses, this is all individual. Anyone who violates any of these 11, and here this broad one, where a guy says, I do not believe in the validity of this particular commandment, curses on him individually.
It's not for Klal Yisrael.
That is correct. Then, look a couple of lines later in the bold, Asher Lo Yakim, very famous Yerushalmi that Ramban quotes, asks the Ramban, V'chi yesh Torah nofelet?
Is there a Torah that is falling down where you have to say Arur curse is the individual, Asher Lo Yakim, who doesn't want to pick up the... Is there a Torah that is falling down? It's a cute little expression. Rabbi Shimon ben Yakim, Rabbi Shimon ben Yakim Omer, Zeha Chazan. This is a reference to the Chazan. What does it mean? It means to the Magbiha. Arur, first, Baruch Asher Yakim et Divrei HaTorah Hazot. Blessed shall be the person who what? When asked, will go ahead and pick up the Sefer Torah and do Hagbaha. And Arur Asher Lo Yakim et Divrei HaTorah Hazot. Somebody who is offered and is not willing to pick up the Sefer Torah, under those circumstances, such a person is to be cursed.
What if he's
here,
then he's
going to try? Okay, it's not, that's obviously not, that's not what you, that's not the issue, that's not the issue why a person that doesn't, Rabbi Yerushalmi and the Ramban is referring to. What do you think, ladies and ladies, is the idea trying to be communicated by the Yerushalmi that after laning, or in Eidot HaMizrach, before laning starts, they do Hagbaha before laning starts. When they open up the Sefer Torah, that's when they say the Zot HaTorah, when they show it. With the, this is what we're going to read, not after you finish reading. Whatever it is, before or after, what symbolic message do you want to create here, which, according to the Yerushalmi, God is offering a blessing for this person having communicated that message and cursing an individual who refuses to communicate that message symbolically transmitted via the act of what we call Hagbaha. What do we mean? What do I mean by that?
Demonstrating your acceptance of that. And it's first in a physical way.
Right?
The raising of the Torah, your acceptance to...
But also you're spreading the word.
Right.
Being part of the public.
Right.
To more.
You're not stirring up a negativity, you're stirring up positive feeling.
Okay. You're all on the right track. Obviously, I have something in mind that I want to add to it. You're on the right track. You know, ladies and gentlemen, that every single time the word ze or zot is indicated in the text, what does the Midrash comment
pointing,
correct? That's the basis of the Minhag, to point, Vizot HaTorah. Because there are several times in the Torah where the Torah writes, Vizeh Ma'aseh HaMenorah. So Rashi says, Moshe couldn't figure out how to make the menorah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him an image, Herolo, Amarish Shel Esh, Menorah Shel Esh, and he said, this is the way you do it. HaKodesh HaZeh Lochem. For some reason, Moshe couldn't understand what Kiddush HaKodesh was. HaKodesh Baruch Hu took out a little moon, and he said, when it's at this point, Chazerei Kodesh. Vizot HaTorah is supposed to point. This is the Torah Asher Sam Moshe. Please open up to Sefer Bamidbar for just a minute. The beginning of Bamidbar. Perek Aleph, Perek Dalet, we read this past Shabbos. So it can't be so foreign. We read it this Shabbos, even though it was a little hard to hear about Friday this Shabbos. What? Perek Dalet. Perek Dalet. This you'll have at the beginning of Perek Dalet, which is the end of Bamidbar, not the beginning of Naso. It also starts Naso as well. Okay. This particular unit here is dealing with traveling in the desert and the coverings of the utensils that are to be placed on every single utensil to make sure that they're not affected by sandstorms in the desert. There are sandstorms, windstorms, and you had to protect the utensils. So each one of the utensils are listed here, and that each one of them are given two covers, two separate covers. So I will identify some of them for you. Okay? Take, for example, look at Pasuk Chet. Ufarsu Alehem, this is talking about the Shulchan. Beget Tolat Shani, V'chisu Oto V'michseh Or Tachash V'samuet Badav. So you had two of them. You had a red one, and Or Tachash, whatever Or Tachash is, that's on the top. Next, take, look at Yudalit. V'al Mizbach HaZahav, you pass it Yudalit. Yifrasu Beget Chelet, you put a blue thing, the chitu al to, and on the top, what do? Michse or tochash. Tasuk yud bet. Kli hasharet, the servant utensils for the mizbeach. V'naknu el beget chelet, put chelet on it. The chitu al to, and the chelet cover with what? B'michse or tochash. Very nice. Then, yud gimel. Dishnu at hamizbeach, ufarsu ala beget argaman. And then in the next pasuk, on the top of that, uparsu alav kisui or tachash b'samu badav. So in each case, there were some two garments, something either chelet or agarman, and what's always on the top, or tachash. Very nice. Now look at pasuk vav. Takes the rav's eyes to notice this. No one even notices this. The rav noticed it. His eyes are different than ours. Pasuk Vav. Let's talk about the Aron. V'nafsnu alav tsur or tachash, ufarsu beget chelet milmala. The chelet is on the top, and the or tachash is on the bottom. Only for the Aron. It takes eyes to notice that. And only just read this, they're only paying attention to it. So the Rav once said in commenting, and with this he explained another phenomenon. This year we are going to have something that will not take place until the year 2055. 2055. That Parshat Naso will be the Shabbos preceding Shavuot. It's a rarity. What always happens every single year is Parshat Bamidbar precedes Shavuot. Every single year. This is a rarity. The next time it will happen is 2055. Now the Mishnah in Megillah tells us that we are supposed to read Bechukotai before Shavuot, and we're supposed to read Kikavo, which we'll learn before Rosh Hashanah. That's what the Mishnah tells us. It's not that there is a machloikis about it. It's not that the Gemara quotes another brisa. No one disagrees with it. You're supposed to read brachot uklalot shevitorat kohanim, the brachot the tochecha in Bechukotai before Shavuos, and brachot uklalot shevimishne Torah before Rosh Hashanah. Klal Yisrael does neither of these. Klal Yisrael reads nitzavim before Rosh Hashanah, first time and every time, no exception to the rule, which at least I can fathom and understand why Klal Yisrael decided to do something against the Mishnah. Because the mitzvah of tshuva is formulated in Parshas Nitzavim. V'shavta ad adoshem elokecha. So I can understand why we've ignored the Mishnah and decide to read Nitzavim before Rosh Hashanah. But why did we decide to read Parshas Bamidbar before Shavuos? This year it's an exception. We're reading Nasol the Shabbos. Again, it's a calendaric quirk that doesn't happen very frequently. But what's the connection between Bamidbar and Shavuos? It's very difficult to find. So the Rav suggested answering with this thing here as well. The Rambam writes that in identifying the color Tchelet, where do we get the dye from? The Chilazo, right? Squid. Very nice. Rambam says, people I know have done experiments, and they were able to extract a sap from a tree called the Koleh Ha'ilan, which has the exact same color. Exact same color. So how do we know that it has to come from the Chilazon? And that's been a tradition that we've had for thousands of years. And the answer is, says the Rambam, I did experiments, that initially when you apply the Koleh Ha'ilan to the garment, to the fabric, it looks exactly like the Chilazon. But you put it into the wash a couple of times, or in a couple of months it starts to fade. the unique quality of the chilazon is once you apply it to the garment, it will retain its rich color 100 years later, no matter how many times you put it in the washing machine. That's why it's tchelos. Very nice. So the Rav took this idea and suggested that this is the message that Moshe Rabbeinu wants to communicate as Am Yisrael are traveling in the Midbar. They're carrying the Aron. What's contained within the Aron? Obviously the Luchot and the Torah. Said even though they are going to be moving from Har Sinai, as they travel, wherever they travel, I want to create a message that the Torah contained in these Luchot are the exact same Luchot, same Torah that we received at Mount Har Sinai. No change, nothing is faded, it's the exact same set of criteria. How symbolically was this message communicated to everybody? By having the chelet cover up on top of the aron as opposed to everything else. Apparently the Or Tachash was a very good piece of material that really protected the other utensils from the sand. But for the aron, they were willing to forego that type of protection to make the announcement that the chelet has to be on top. And in that respect, Al-Pi Drush, he said therein might be the connection to Parshat Bamidbar before Shavuot. Because Shavuot is also Kabbalat Torah. So which Torah are we going to be accepting? Which one? The exact same Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore we read, if you accept this idea, you make this announcement with the Tchelos of the Aron right before Shavuot. That's what I believe is the Vizot HaTorah as well. Every single person points, and he says, which Torah did we just read, or which Torah will we going to read? Vizot HaTorah, Asher Sam Moshe, Lefnei B'nei Yisrael.
Like a witness.
Exactly. We are confirming that although we've gone through 3,300 years, we are testifying, in effect, that we recognize that the same set of values of 613 mitzvot are as applicable then as they are today as well. Symbolically, the Yerushalmi believe that this is done every single time we read the Torah. How do you make that demonstration? You pick up the Torah and a person points and he says, Vizot HaTorah. So a person who is willing to pick up the Torah and make that announcement, Baruch. Because he's perpetuating the continuity of Torah. But somebody who refuses to do so, not because he can't abandon that, it's because he doesn't want to acknowledge that the Torah of today has the same authority as the Torah of 3,300 years ago. Therefore, what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Arur. I'm going to curse such a person. Asher lo yakim et divrei haTorah hazot. That's what I believe is the message which the Ramban, quoting the Yerushalmi, is trying to share with us. Finally, for today, please open up the next page. I mentioned to you last week, because somebody asked about it, that Hasagat Gvul, when the Torah writes, Arur Matzig Gvul Re'ehu, I told you that it has nothing to do with the colloquial use of the word Hasagat Gvul, of encroaching on somebody's business, competition in business. Nothing to do with it. Hasagat Gvul means you move the fence in the middle of the night to expand your backyard. In effect, it's theft. That's all it is. However, in halachic literature, according to some, and Rav Moshe is one of the biggest proponents of the idea that Hasagat Gvul applies right here in the United States of America, listen to this case, a question posed to Rav Moshe in 1954 about Tushtiblach. Listen to this.
And I guarantee nobody listens to Rav Moshe. Because there was an article in the New York Times about a year and a half, 2 years ago about Borough Park, which is 20 square blocks, 40th Street to 60th Street, 9th to 18th Avenue, and according to this little theory, there are 500 shtibla in the 20 square block area. 500. And trust me, some of these would have violated Rav Moshe's criteria. Listen to this. We'll just read the question. Just give me 2 minutes. Bidvar Haravi, Shitova me'elu shehitpalalu etzlo, miyom shekana beit hakneset shelo karov l'shalosh shanim. Somebody bought a house, gutted the downstairs, and made it a shul. And he, the rebel, lives upstairs. Right? He owns the shul. When you pay dues, the dues goes into his pocket. When you make a mishaberach for the Beit Knesset, when you get an aliyah, it goes into his pocket. They make an appeal for the shul, it goes into his pocket. That's how he earns his living. Plus, he's living tax-free, because since there's a minyan in the shul, it's off the tax rolls. V'acha kein yisdu bigvu lo Beit HaKnesset acher. They established another shtibula, someplace else. And I happen to know, I had asked somebody, what was this referring to? It's referring to a shtibula on 54th Street, between 14th and 15th Avenue, Borough Park, and this in 1954, and that somebody else opened up a shtibula on 52nd Street, 2.5 blocks away.
54th
is sufficient. There's many shtibula on 54th Street. And a big shul on 53rd and 16th Avenue, Bnei Yehuda, right around the corner. Big shul. Al yidei zeh, hisigu givulo, v'kipchu parnasato. Now that there's another shtibul, number one, members of the original shtibul decided we're going there. Why? The Rebbetzin's cholent is a lot better than this Rebbetzin. Who cares what the reason is? They're not going there anymore. It's noisier, whatever it is. Who cares? So number one, there are dollars taken out of his pocket. He is not going to have the same kind of income. Vidam ki huzal shivui beit hakneset shelo. They obviously decrease the value of the shul al yidei zeh asher e eshal v'machlo below hefsid gadol ma'od. If he wants to sell this house, he has to take a financial bet because he can't sell it as a residence any longer. Why?
Because
downstairs there's no more kitchen, there's no more living room. It's a shul. Who wants to buy a shul? Very nice. Very nice. So the guy, shul number one, rebel number one, is asking for financial compensation and an apology from rebel number two, and that's what he's asking Rav Moshe for, based on the Isur of Hasagat Vov. Look at the next paragraph on the next page, just 2 lines. It says Rav Moshe, double push it. Hanachol la'aniyat dati, shelo haya rishut lo lahem, velo l'shum adam liyaseid beit hakneset acher. No person has a right to open up another shul. She'al yidei zeh vaday shaharbe me'elu shehayu holchim etzlo. Ki shelo hayu miyasim beit acher, yelchu lebeit hakneset acher, she yistu. There is no doubt, he said, that you can't open up a second shul. You cannot open up a second shul. And Rabbi Shi quotes the Isur of Hasagat Gevul. And then he writes at the very end, in order to what? To atone for the Aveiru which has already taken place. What do you have to do? You have to go and offer compensation until the guy is going to say, Ani Moichalach. Rav Moshe doesn't say how much money he has to give, so he'll have to go to some accountant who will figure out how much money he took out of the guy's pocket, and you will have to go ahead and do such a thing like that. So when Rav Moshe would be faced with Alatina questions, it would be open and shut case in his mind that you could never have EJ's and Plaza Pizza right across the street from one another. In fact, I'll tell you how it started, Tina. When I moved to Teaneck in 1974, there was not one kosher eatery in Teaneck. Zippo, nada. There was a kosher pizza shop in Fairlawn. In Fairlawn.
In 1976, somebody opened up a kosher pizza shop on Cedar Lane, and the guy from Fairlawn took him to his entire for Hasagas Gvul. Because half of his clientele was coming from where? From Peanut. And had he gone to Rav Moshe, Rav Moshe would probably say, sorry, you can't open up. The Rav had a totally different perspective, and the Rav said that in America, there's no such thing as Hasagas Gvul in effect. Competition in business is allowed. He had a different understanding of some of the Gemaras. But this is something that has become, and it's become to such a point that fortunately, the YU Bezdin, which doesn't always follow Piskei Halacha the Rav, but the YU Bezdin in this regard has decided to accept the Rav's opinion. And that's why today, when new stores open, the old storekeepers don't even bother going to a Bezdin because they lose every single time. There's only one time when something happened and they went to another Bezdin. They went to a Muncie Bezdin, and it was Chopsticks versus Hunan. When Chopsticks opened up, Hunan sued him, and he didn't want to go to the YU Bezdin because he knew he would lose. So he went to Sutton. You can't force a guy to go to a particular Bezdin. He went to a Muncie, and the Muncie Bezdin ruled that Chopstick has to make compensation. And there were all kinds of deals that had to be accommodated for them. But that's the rabbinic extension of Arur Masig Gvul Re'ehu, that it means to enter into somebody's livelihood and open up competition, which now takes away the boundary of somebody else. Doesn't mean it's his property, but it means his ability to earn a living. Okay, we'll stop there, Rabbi Tom. He says the shul, same thing.
No, but he said,
Rav Moshe says the same thing.
Now
if it's
shul,
it was shul. According to Rav Moshe, that's correct.
He can.
Here's what right. Yeah. He didn't want to be sensitive.